The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Advertising Corporation and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found in his Washington Times Communities column, Forbidden Siegel Talk.
It's time now for The Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you've been asking God all day long if there's anything to watch or listen to other than the Super Bowl, if you happen to be one of those two or three Americans that are not into football. Well, yes, for those of you who are, say, more into the arts, more into movies than sports, welcome to our program. Joining us today, of course, one of our recurring co-hosts, film critic Mark Boobian. Mark, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Bob. What's the Super Bowl again?
Yeah, Mark's a kindred spirit. He and I are, most of my friends are into sports, and I'll go to Super Bowl parties. In fact, I was at one for a while. I had to leave early to come to the station. But I go for the food. I go to watch the interesting commercials, which were less than stellar this year, so far, the ones I've seen. And, boy, if I'm betting money on one of the teams, but maybe. But even if it was the Chargers, I feel like I'm from the planet Vulcan. The idea that because I live in San Diego, somehow my identity is strengthened if the Chargers win. I've never related to that. I guess I did in high school.
I went to the high school.
I was into the school spirit. I wanted us to win the basketball game or the football game. I haven't been able to relate to that in San Diego. Don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think sports are great, but boy, it's just so when I occasionally meet somebody like Mark who also doesn't care about football, then there's somebody out there going, I've been listening to this guy for years. I didn't know he wasn't into football. The heck else are you going to be into if you're not into football? What the hell's wrong with that boy?
Yeah, don't give out your address. Yeah, I won't give out mine either. Get hunted down.
Yeah, I probably get in less trouble with all the comments I've made about Muslim terrorists than the comment I just made.
Well, you've crossed the line here,
no
Bob.
No kidding. Boy, oh boy.
But that's how it goes. I mean, we're... Now, if they had a Super Bowl of surfing, that would be my
thing. Now, I'll say this. I love watching surfing on
TV. Yeah, it's
a lot
of fun.
And I don't surf. Mark is a surfer, I should say. Body surf. That's not quite as good, but it is fun.
It's still worth
it. So I at least relate to the ocean. So.
I promise not to ever run you over if I ever see you out in the ocean. So don't, you can come out when I'm out there.
Yeah.
It's a safe place.
Yeah. So body surfing is like regular surfing, except your body is the board.
Yeah.
You're not just one with the board. You are the board. Yeah. I'll tell myself that. This is what they call denial.
Right. Exactly.
So what movies are on your radar
having
today?
Nothing to do with football, surfing, body surfing, or anything to do with the ocean at all, I have a couple of movies that I wanted to talk about today. Instead of my usual grab bag of 10 or 20 that we kind of randomly talk about, I've got just two movies I wanted to see if we could discuss a little bit and see what comes of it. The first one is the newer of the two, and it came out at Christmas. It's The Hobbit. Part 2, The Desolation of Smaug.
And I was planning all Christmas to see that. I somehow missed it. Of course, I loved The Lord of the Rings more than you.
Yes.
More than you. And I thought the first Hobbit movie was okay. I didn't love it, but I liked it. I was certainly planning to see the other one, but I guess it wasn't keeping me up at nights because I never did get around to seeing it.
Yeah, and I have mixed feelings about it. Just a little bit about my background, though, before we start talking about the movie itself. Let me talk about me. You're a big Tolkien fan. Yes, I am. Like, you kind of have these moments in life when these great things happen to you. And this sounds really cliche, and I was kind of thinking about this earlier. But, like when you become a Christian, that's a life-changing moment, and it influences your worldview and changes the way you see the world, you interact with it, changes who you are. Same goes with when you get married, when you meet your wife, when you have children. for me, the first really big thing that I ever discovered that really influenced me in reality, this is not just being colloquial, but was when I read The Lord of the Rings. I discovered it just having heard about it. Nobody introduced me to the books. I just sort of randomly knew that this was this famous work and I wanted to read it. And I was bowled over by it, completely blown away. The story was so amazing and the characters were so rich, deep, and alive. It, like nothing else really I've read since, or and certainly not before. And the thing that really got me after I finished the book, I mean, I didn't want the story to end. I even bet my brother that I was going to finish this book before him. I was much closer to the end. I read faster than him. And I was trying to motivate him to finish the book he was reading because he wanted to move on to read The Lord of the Rings. So I was like, yeah, I'll bet you, you know, $5 I can finish before you. The thing is, I didn't want the story to end so much. I just dragged my feet and like I finished like a month
later.
Well,
you were in good company because Tolkien dragged his feet while he was writing it.
Yes,
the publishers
did.
Wanted him to hurry up. He would be working on the Silmarillion, which they didn't care about.
Right, but they'd did.
They'd sneak over to his house to see what kind of work he was doing. He'd be working on the maps. He'd go, I can't get the maps right. They'd say, forget the maps. Just finish the stupid story.
But the thing is, that's really, I think, part of why everything is so great. And when I move past The Lord of the Rings, The Lord of the Rings itself is this awesome story, but then I read The Silmarillion because I couldn't get enough. I already knew that it wasn't as good of a book, and I did suffer through it.
Well, that was
way.
More
it's
of a
boring.
Collection of myths and short stories.
It's
it wasn't
not even
really
that.
A novel.
It's like, it's almost like the Bible, but written worse. I don't know how to put it, but
that didn't sound too
the most boring part of the Bible that you don't want to read, you know, letters
Leviticus,
from Paul to,
Numbers,
or yeah, yeah. Leviticus. Okay. It's more like notes compiled.
Well, and he passed away before it was yeah. completed. Didn't his son kind of finish
yes,
it
his,
up?
Yes, his son did. And the beginning of the book, actually,
places,
yeah. yeah, and his son is very gracious and he writes the opening notes to it and everything. And he tells you what happened and what's going on. So going into the book, you don't have any misconceptions about this being another Lord of the Rings. And there are moments in the book that are just amazing because there are stories that were finished or close enough that they actually did make sense.
But that book meant more to him than Lord of the Rings.
Yeah,
the
well, in a way.
The Hobbit had been a hit. His publishers wanted the next exciting story, but he was interested in creating a whole mythology and a whole sub-world.
Right.
Even more than the stories themselves.
I'm not sure how much of that really is true. I think his interest, I don't know a lot about Tolkien as a man per se.
Well, based on a biography I read
oh,
of him.
Oh, okay, so you know more than I
well,
do then. Yeah,
that was interesting. Yeah, he was kind of, his friend C.S. Lewis would call it sub-creation.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that you told me once, I didn't get from the book, that you told me that he was also creating this language
yes.
of the elves.
That's right.
And he wanted to give the language a context.
A context.
So in a sense, the story, of course, is what interested the public. But I think he himself was driven by a lot of different
right.
things.
He himself was a linguist. He even translated the Jerusalem. He's one of the many translators on the Jerusalem Bible.
Oh,
so.
that I did. Boy, see, yeah. we're both trading information.
There we
Neither
go.
One of us knew.
That's
I,
right.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, there you go. But when I read the Silmarillion, I discovered that there was this huge context to the story of the Lord of the Rings. And then the second time I read The Lord of the Rings, I had all of this knowledge that I garnered from the Silmarillion. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, and I'm not exaggerating, references to the past that has nothing to do with the context of the story at the time. But it's imperative to the world as a whole. So there's many, many references to the Silmarillion that make a lot of sense and really richen the story of the Lord of the Rings. So I was just absolutely enthralled with this whole thing when I was in high school, and it was really really a wonderful thing. And there are so many great things this book brings to life and brings into kind of our cultural consciousness that it's just an amazing story, amazing book, and we have a lot to benefit from it as people because it's such a great work of art. Says a lot about humanity, says a lot about where we are, a wondrous, awesome being, as well as about our failings and about evil and good and the struggle against good and evil. But even more than that, the little things that kind of wear us down, the corruption of the ring was a big symbol in the story and how over a long period of time, it really wore out Gollum, the character that we see. Unfortunately, we see him in the Lord of the Rings movies, which I didn't like the way he was depicted. But and we can also see that there's nobility in people where they can resist that, like the hobbits who had sort of this kind of interior genetic kind of nobility to them. And so you can really garner a lot about
the hobbits were so much into the simplicity of life that the complex seduction of the ring didn't
maybe overpass them. And the funny thing is here these are these chubby little guys running around enjoying the heck out of life, and everybody's like, oh, those guys, forget them.
Which ultimately is all life is supposed to be about.
Right, they're doing the thing, and in reality, they're also much tougher and better than anybody ever can imagine. They're much deeper than even the oldest of the old would believe. You know, so. Again, there's so much you can take from these stories, and it was the thing I like that I talk about a lot is it's not banging you over the head with all these themes about God or about humanity or about who we are and what's right and wrong.
Hasn't he even denied that he was trying to put Christian symbolism in
it? He's denied that it was an allegory, which is kind of with Narnia retold the Bible story.
Yeah, and Lewis was upfront about what he was doing. But the other side of that, though, is if we're made in the image of God, and of course Tolkien was a dedicated Christian, that would have to just come out in his work, even if that's not exactly what he was trying to do.
Absolutely. So, yeah, and that's exactly the way I view it. It's obviously his worldview, as I mentioned at the beginning, where you come to know God and have this relationship with Christ that influences who you are, and that's going to come out in whatever you do, and that's in his writing and his creativity. So you can see many Christian elements in there, but they're not banging you over the head. They're just part of who these characters are and what they are, and it just gives so much dimension to the books and the stories. So that's my big lead in to talk about The Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Now, as you know, I didn't like The Lord of the Rings. And to say I didn't like them doesn't even do it justice.
You hated it. I know Paul, I was with him when he saw it. All right, we'll find out why Mark hated The Lord of the Rings movies, even though he loved the books, when we return to The Bob Siegel Show.
Hey, this is Lori K. Lewis, a frequent co-host on The Bob Siegel Show, Talk Radio 1170 on KCBQ. If you have questions or comments during this radio broadcast, please call Bob at this toll-free number, 1-888-344-1170. Again, the number is 1-888-344-1170. We'd like to hear what you have to say.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show, our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Today, of course, is a pop culture edition. And speaking of the arts, next Sunday, February the 9th, at Skyline Church, 11 o'clock in the morning, I will be performing a play that I wrote called The Dust of Eden. Now, The Dust of Eden was produced as a fully cast show by Christian Community Theater in the year 1997, but it has also been performed by me as a one-man oral interpretation in which I change my voice for each different character on college campuses and churches all over the country, from up in North Dakota, Minnesota, to the East Coast, Pennsylvania, Massachusetts, New York. In this simple story, which is actually the most popular of my plays, 25-year-old Sean Knight is informed by an angel that he has only one day left to live. Through flashbacks, Sean recalls his high school and college days, tracing a romantic relationship with Gretchen, an unpopular Jewish girl, and her traumatized sister. Now, Skyline Church is a very big place. For more info, such as the actual room where we're performing this and all the details you would need, go to the Bob Siegel Facebook page. I almost said my website, but I actually put it up on my Facebook page instead. And there's lots of info there posted for you. There is no admission charge, but listen to this. There's no infants or toddlers allowed either. So that's the good news, no admission. The bad news, leave your infants and toddlers with a babysitter. But there's a free lunch provided during intermission. That ought to motivate you to find a babysitter. Now, if you know me only through this radio show, I would love to meet you in person. So coming out to the Dust of Eden, Sunday, February 9th at Skyline Church. And if you have another church commitment on that day, because it is Sunday, I will personally write a note to your pastor and he will excuse you that morning. But for now, welcome back film critic Mark Boubian.
Thanks, Bob. Okay. So, as I was saying about the Lord of the Rings, the thing that I didn't like. Now, this would be a very long list, and I think we need 5 or 6 shows to cover it.
Out of the 3 movies, I know that when we finished watching The Fellowship, you did like
it. I loved
it. The deal breaker for you was The Two Towers, correct?
The Two Towers began the deal breaking. Yes, absolutely. Where I felt like, okay, now the first book, there's not a lot that really happens. And what does happen, he actually cut out of the movie, but as a good decision, there's a character that's quite out of place in a way. And, he left that completely out of the film and that's fine. But that was where some of the excitement early on happened. So going through that, he had time to develop the characters. You got a sense of this, that he was pacing it really well and the characters were being respected and he was introducing the character, not necessarily exactly how it happened in the book, but that's fine. As long as you get the idea of who they are and what they're all about, that's really what mattered the most to me, that the characters really came across as who they were and had that, maybe not certainly not the amount of richness, of course, as a film versus a book, but at least some of that. So it started off that way, and it was doing very well, and I love the scene in Moria, Khazad Dûm. That was an amazing moment in the book and in the film as well. And then the second movie, The Two Towers, starts with Gandalf falling into the pit, and it's an amazing moment. I was like screaming, yeah, all right, that's so great to see that with the Balrog and the flame, everything. That's an awesome cinematic moment, and that's where I should have left the movie right there, because almost everything that followed was just totally destructive.
Now, let me ask you a question. Was it stuff about the movie that you would not have liked in its own right, or is it because of the changes? I know they made many changes from the books, and you were so aware of them, having known the books so well.
That's a very difficult question to answer, because I am so deeply entrenched into the world of Lord of the Rings. I wouldn't be able to step out and say, yeah, the movie bothered me because of this. I doubt, to be honest, I really doubt these things would have bothered me if I didn't know the story. But maybe, I mean, I'll point some of the things out.
So you still thought it was well acted and well done.
Yeah, so let me throw out a couple of things. Now, first, in terms of film making, there are several terrible things that he did with the movie. There were some, let's see, the effects.
He
are
had
terrible.
To warm up for making King Kong, so he had to do terrible things.
Right. Thanks there. Okay, so I hated the way Gollum was animated. He looked completely fake, and he was so off-putting.
See, now that's surprising.
I
didn't think he looked that fake.
He looked like was drawn by a crayon on the screen.
He was better than Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah,
you
okay.
At least give him that.
If that's your standard of measurement.
Well, Jar Jar's an easy act to follow,
yes,
I guess.
Yes, right, exactly. Everybody's so bothered by everything else Jar Jar does, they don't notice him being badly animated. So, but yeah, for me, I just couldn't stand the way Gollum looks, so I don't even want to watch the movie.
So
again.
You're saying it's bad animation as opposed to that's not the way you envisioned him when you read the books?
Not only that, I did not envision him that way when I read the books, but he's so ugly. It's just
gross. When I was reading the books, it sounded to me like they were describing somebody ugly.
He was corrupt, certainly, yeah. And he was probably ugly, but the problem with it in the film is that he's so horrifically ugly in a way that just makes my stomach churn, as opposed to the orcs, who are horribly ugly but scary and gross and monstrous. They're fun to look at.
And of course, one can be beautiful and still be evil. So the idea of equating ugliness with evil, that can be kind of deceptive too.
Right.
There's some very good looking people that are like Pied Pipers because they are evil.
Right, which is a good point. And Sauron in the earlier story, in the history prior to The Lord of the Rings, he does have to convince a bunch of people to make the rings. He didn't come as this ugly guy.
Right.
He was beautiful and deceptive.
Yeah,
and
like Satan before his fall.
Exactly. And so that's the story before. And like you point out, evil can take any form. So, but to me, regardless of who Gollum was, how he looked to me, basically they took a baby, put some dog hair on it, and then kind of swung it around the screen. That grossed me out. I don't know. That was not appealing to me aesthetically. So now that's purely me. So anybody could see this and think, okay, that does look a little gross, but I like it or whatever. So I'd be willing to bend on that. Just personally, I won't watch those scenes because I'm put off by it. However, there's so much destruction to character, the characters that I came to know and love and respect, and it seemed to me to be absolutely disrespectful. And that's really my issue. It showed a great disregard for the work as a whole. When people are celebrating this wonderful movie that brought this book to life for us in the theaters, I was thinking to myself, did you guys read the
books?
Well,
and to be fair to that point, Tolkien would never have wanted that to be made into a movie. I remember when he freaked out just because people were trying to make other editions. He authorized one paperback version and one only, and somehow somebody got the rights to make another paper. So if that bothered him, he wouldn't have wanted the movies, but I think he wouldn't have wanted the movies because he figured Hollywood would take those three volumes and make one two-hour movie out of it. When I heard they were going to make three movies, I felt that Jackson was at least attempting to be respectful.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. And that's great that he did, because you can't tell that story in one movie, period. No way. It's just not going to fly.
Of course, you could tell The Hobbit in one movie. Making that in three movies.
This will be a lead up to that. Trust me, Bob. I actually have something to say about that as well. But to stick on The Lord of the Rings. Okay, so the couple of characters that I thought were really wrecked were Treebeard, who was this absolutely new character that I'd never seen before. He's this tree and he's slow moving, slow thinking, but he's wise. He's old.
You didn't like the way he looked in the movie?
Okay. It's not about how he looked. It's about who he was.
Okay. Because if anyone didn't like the way he looked, get Disney's Babes in Toyland and watch their talking trees.
Yeah.
Then go back and look at Treebeard. He'll never look better to you.
Yeah. Right. There you go. That's a good comparison. But the way Treebeard was in the film, as opposed to the book, he took the hobbits in, as in the film, but then he knows that Saruman is evil. Treebeard is the oldest person in Middle Earth. Okay, now, the elves are immortal. This is the oldest person in Middle Earth. The Silmarillion doesn't talk about him, and they ruin this character because they make him dumb. And I'll explain that.
Oh, okay.
After
and that's pretty significant. If somebody was smart in the book and dumb in the movie, that's a bad change to make. All right, you're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with film critic Mark Booby, and we will be right back.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Bob Siegel.
Welcome back to our program. We are discussing the movie The Hobbit. Well, we're going to get to it eventually. First, we had to give you the entire history of J.R. Tolkien and the Silmarillion and the Lord of the Rings. And anyway, welcome back, film critic Mark Booby.
Thanks, Bob. In the vein of Tolkien, we're going through the history before we tell the story.
Tolkien would at least appreciate the pace with which we're doing this radio show.
Yes, we're doing a great job. So, okay, so with Treebeard, this is, like I said, the oldest character in Middle-earth, and that's a very significant statement to make in the world of Lord of the Rings. And yet, he realizes Saruman is evil, that Saruman is destroying his forest. He's the caretaker of the forest. He knows what's going on. He's been around. And he has a lot of other things about his character that make him so rich and wonderful.
So what would you suppose would have been the motive of the director to make such a substantial change?
Well, let me tell you what the change is, and then I'll get to that. Okay, so the change is that everything that Treebeard does is the opposite, basically ends up being the opposite. He decides in the book to help the hobbits. He has to convince the other Ents, which is the species he is, to attack Saruman. And he takes that task on, and having met the hobbits, that's significant to him, and that it's a very important part. And again, it's about characterization, whatever. So he takes the hobbits, and they attack Isengard. Now, in the movie, the change is that Treebeard says, no, I'm not going to help you. We don't want to hurt Saruman. He's not doing anything to us except burning down part of our forest and killing the trees we're supposed to be taken care of. But no. We don't care about that.
Well, you'd think a tree would be a better environmentalist than that.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so then the the hobbits trick him into helping us. We need to go home, so why don't you carry us home? Take us that way. And that way just happens to be around Isengard. And how they knew where Isengard was, I still am not quite sure, but whatever. So Treebeard's walking towards Isengard and then sees the destruction, the amount of destruction that somehow he didn't know about, even though, once again, he's the caretaker, whatever. So he's tricked into helping the hobbits. And that just reduces his character to a level of more, I don't know what a good word is to say on the radio, but I guess I'll say moronic. I mean, he's really that bad of a character in the film because there's no depth to him. And then he helps the hobbits and everything's great. We have the whole Isengard stuff that happens in the book, whatever. So that's was really destructive to a character that I love. Now, if this was the only thing that happened in the movie, I would be willing to give it a little bit of a break, but this continues throughout.
Well, has Peter Jackson done an interview where he explained the changes he made? Because he must have known that would be huge to Lord of the Rings fans.
To be honest, I really don't know what he thinks. I have not looked for interviews from him because I was very put off by this whole thing. Now, another character that was wrecked is Faramir Boromir, who betrays the hobbits
at the end of the first book.
Yeah. His brother, who is this really kind of like his half-brother, there's a really important aspect to their brotherhood that doesn't come out in the film, but can't come out in the film because it's a film, no problem. But the issue that occurs in the film is that instead of his brother is resistant to the ring in the book because he's of a nobler stock, I guess you could say. And when he meets the hobbits, he first takes them captive, but he understands when he's faced with the ring, he is tempted by it. And that temptation leads him to understand the depth of evil of the ring and how dangerous it is and how corrupting it is and how horrifyingly scary this thing is that these guys are carrying. And so his main purpose is to get them out of there, but to help them along their way so they can do what they're supposed to do, even though they wouldn't tell them what it was. So he knows what the ring is all about, even though he doesn't understand all of it. He doesn't know the story, but he once he's confronted with that, the level of temptation, he recognizes it for the evil it is. In the movie, he's given the ring. He keeps the ring. He says, I'm taking you away. He goes to Osgiliath, which is the city that's being in the process of being destroyed at this point in the story. And it's when he gazes upon the Nazgul flying overhead and realizes that we can't beat these guys. They're too strong for us. I'm going to give him the ring back so he can go along on his way and try and help us. What kind of king's son is that? Somebody who only cares about his own skin, or he's only concerned about the surface level. You know, oh, I've got to protect my kingdom. I'm not concerned about whether something is good or evil. I just don't want to be destroyed. You know, I don't want to stop evil. I just want to stop evil from hurting us. There's a significant difference to that point of view. Stopping evil versus stopping evil because it might just get in my way sometime. So those kind of things are really, really damaging to who the characters are and to what the story as a whole really has to give us or to relay to us. So I'm very hurt by this tragedy that I think he bestowed upon this wonderful work. And I think the thing that bothered me most is nobody really noticed. I was at premieres for these shows with the Lord of the Rings Club, and everybody's celebrating the films like they're the greatest thing ever, and that's all I've ever heard.
Now, was Faramir's troubled relationship with his father the same in the book,
yes,
or did they change?
His father loved Boromir better.
More, okay.
Mm-hmm. And
now,
I've
kind of lucked out in a way, because I did read The Lord of the Rings also, but way back when I was in high school. And with some exception, I just didn't remember and therefore did not notice the changes they made. It freed me up to enjoy the movie more. But
right.
I must say that as a principal, I agree with you. I think that if an author writes a book, the producer owes it to that author, especially if the author's not alive anymore. They claim they're paying a tribute to him to not make changes.
Right. And again, you can't just get away with he's got to change stuff because it's a movie. You can't put everything in a movie. And he had the freedom to put more in the movie because he spent the time. It's three movies rather than one. But it's the way he changed things, and it's stuff he didn't have to do. Now, I think the answer to your question about why he did this, and this was pointed out to me by somebody else after seeing one of the movies, that he's trying to build up the hobbits as the heroes, so he doesn't want to give anything to the other characters that might sort of undermine the heroism of those hobbits. So Treebeard can't be heroic in his own right because that would take away the heroism of the two hobbits. Now, in the book, that did not. And there's some amazing scenes later on. And even at the end of the book, they're confronted and they, after all they've been through, they're confronted by other hobbits and they laugh in their faces. And this moment is so awesome because you know these guys have been through everything and they are noble and they are heroic.
Okay, well, I'm curious to know what some of your problems were with Return of the King. Paul asked you a good question during the last break. Which of the 10 endings to Return of the King did you not like? So we'll find out about that. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
Do your kids ask you questions about God and the Bible that you can't answer? Sign yourself or your child up for a class with lots of solid answers at educateforlife.org before someone else gives them the wrong answers. Are you tired of not knowing what to say when your friends and family ask you questions about God and the Bible? Get equipped by signing up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone asks you, "How do you know the Bible's true?" do you say something like, "I just know it is"? If you're tired of giving lame answers, sign up for a class at educateforlife.org. When someone says that God isn't real, wouldn't it be fun to prove that he is? Quickly, like a verbal ninja? By using science and logic. Sign up for a class at educateforlife.org with Christian apologetics teacher Kevin Conover, and you'll learn how to do that. educateforlife.org.
When the truth is found to be lies, and all the joy within you dies, don't you want somebody to love?
Don't well, film critic Mark Moody wanted a movie to love, but The Lord of the Rings was not that movie. Mark, welcome back to our program.
Thanks, Bob. Okay, well, let me put on the brakes for a second and I said I was going to talk about two movies, but I don't think I'm going to have time. I really wanted to talk about The Hunger Games, especially today, because one of the actors in the film, Philip Seymour Hoffman, died today. And I had hoped to make a little
bit of a
tribute.
He was a phenomenal actor.
Absolutely.
What a tragedy.
Yes, it is. And even he's not even used to his potential in The Hunger Games. He's very good in the movie, but he has a lot of other absolutely astounding
great films. Well, we were
going to
have you back on
and we can talk about
it in a few weeks, so you can maybe talk about that one then.
That would be wonderful. I would so much enjoy that. Thank you very much, Bob. You are the most gracious host I know.
So louder? I didn't get all
that. Yes, the absolutely most beyond anything gracious host. So, okay, so now to answer the question about the, let's see, the Return of the King. You know, I start to lose track of where the two movies kind of break apart because I've kind of...
Well, there was one scene I didn't like, and I believe, like I said, I read the book so long ago, I believe it was when Sam was falsely accused by Gollum of betraying them.
Right.
And Frodo kicked him out. Was that in the book or was that not in the book?
There is some deception on the part of Gollum, and Sam and Gollum have been fighting the whole time.
Well, I knew they fought in the book, but did Frodo actually kick Sam
out? Now, I don't remember if he kicked Sam out or if Sam left on his own.
I remember I didn't like that scene. I was never buying it. I didn't think Frodo would have given into it that easily.
Right, and I'd have to... This is one of... It's so detailed at this point that I'd really have to look at the book. I do know that Sam was either led off and betrayed by Gollum to get it, because he's got to get rid of Sam in order to kill Frodo and get the ring.
Sam's the one that's kind of on to what he's doing.
Yes, exactly. So he's got to get rid of him. And through deception, that's how he does it. And he does deceive both Sam and Frodo, but I don't remember where the crossing takes place or exactly how. So unfortunately, I can't be specific about that one. But some areas that I think were really damaged also. Now, in terms of story, once again, I like the way the story went in The Lord of the Rings. There were some drastic changes. There's a scene where Aragorn is dragged away by some wargs, the big gigantic wolves. And that's not in the book at all, but that was an interesting scene. And
what about the scene where those ghost warriors came and fought a whole battle from? That is in the book. Okay.
Absolutely. That was an imperative part of who Aragorn was. So that's a great thing to see in the movie. That's the kind of thing that really builds up who the characters are and shows you their nobility, their greatness.
Did you like Return of the King a little better than Two Towers, or was it worse?
I was so killed by the two. I think it was probably worse.
The ship had sailed by that time.
Yeah, I think they're equally bad. I would say maybe a little worse just because I don't know exactly where the line is that Jackson broke the two apart, because I don't think it's exactly the same. But story-wise, one of the changes that he made that I did not appreciate was the killing of the Nazgul by Eowyn, the female warrior, the female rider of Rohan. Now, in the book, what happens is she dresses up like one of the riders. She's told by her king father, he's not really her father, but he's her adoptive father, I guess. He says, you can't come. And he doesn't want her to come because he's her father.
He doesn't want her to get hurt. Yeah.
But it's played out really poorly in the film. Unfortunately, you're a woman. Stay behind. And there's a little bit of that, too, in Lord of the Rings, because he's depicting that time. But it really had more to do with
the father. He obviously never watched Major Kira in Deep Space Nine. Couldn't have made a comment
like that.
Because
she would have blown him up or something with a, terrorist bomb or whatever. But yeah, so... what she does in the book is she disguises herself completely. And Tolkien doesn't even reveal who she is. It's just, and the Hobbit's getting left behind too, because he's this little guy, hey, you can't come, you're too small. And the king likes the Hobbit because there's this relationship that develops that we don't see in the movie, unfortunately. But again, there are some things give and take. That's another one. But, you don't see that relationship develop, and then so it's kind of like a you just stay behind because you're small, when in reality it was you stay behind because I don't want you to get hurt either. So the Hobbit and Eowyn are left in kind of the same boat. What happens in the book is this warrior comes up to the Hobbit and says, Master Hobbit, you can come with me. And he quote unquote throws a helmet down to the Hobbit to disguise him, and then he gets on the horse and they ride in the back. so nobody notices them, and they get to the war, and they prove to be the most important part of the whole war, practically. I mean, not just the battle, but they really take the guy down. It's only the destruction of the ring that's more important than what they do. So this scene when the Nazgul attacks the girl, she reveals herself to be a woman. He says, "No man can kill me. Don't you know that?" And she tears off her helmet. "I'm a woman." And that was one of the greatest scenes I've ever read. It was so amazing. Chills up and down the spine. Unfortunately, we already know she's a woman. We already know the stuff about the Nazgul. There's
probably just sounds like some deal an agent made with the producer when he signed up the actress.
I don't know, but it let all the air out of the scene. And it just, it was very damaging to this moment in the film to not think that this was a male warrior and that there was something.
The element of surprise is important in good drama.
It was. And Tolkien did a wonderful job of making it, you know, obvious in a way that it's Eowyn, but not so clear. When in the movie, "I'm Eowyn, get on the horse." I mean, come on. Okay, you know, let us think for ourselves a little bit too, Mr. Jackson. Okay, so obviously I do have a lot of problems. I could complain about this movie forever, but suffice it to say
glad we're giving you this long chance to vent, Mark.
And I'm using it, aren't I? Yes, that's right. Maybe you're going to regret it someday. All the letters you get from angry Lord of the Rings fans. The football fans are nothing compared to those guys.
No way, I'm watching that lame radio show again.
That's right. So, and then I'm going to make matters worse in a few minutes here. Okay, so I, again, didn't like the way Jackson handled things because he made a lot of changes to who the characters were, what they were about. Thematically, everything changed. And to answer the question about which of the 10 endings I liked best, I would have to say the one that happened first, because that's when I should have left. And I didn't. So I don't know why.
And yet somehow, years later, you managed to get yourself to the theater to watch The Hobbit.
Okay.
How on earth did that happen now, after your experience with Lord of the Rings?
You wouldn't believe. Okay, so at this point, my daughter's old enough to want to see The Hobbit, and I love the story. So, and she's read the book, and so I thought, okay, this would be funny. She really wanted to see it. She's old enough to go by herself even. So I said, I'll go with you. And I said to myself, he's already wrecked the Lord of the Rings. I know he's going to wreck this one. So I don't have any expectations of coming
and
away.
When you have low expectations, usually it's not as bad as you thought.
Exactly. So it wasn't as bad as I thought. Now, the one criticism I'm going to make, not of the movie, but of the critics, is something you brought up, and it's being repeated over and over. Sorry, Bob, I'm going to disagree with you on this one.
About how they took one short little book and made three movies?
It's not a short little book!
Mark, compared to The Lord of the Rings,
yes,
it is.
Yes, of course. And they made,
come on. You're telling me a producer didn't go, we had three movies in Lord of the Rings, this is going to be three movies with The Hobbit.
Okay,
it's a working formula.
Exactly. That's what happened. Actually, they were originally going to do two movies, which
right.
I thought was a good idea.
Which is closer to the size.
Okay, so here's what's going on, and I'll tell you why I think this is a good idea. The first reason I'll tell you why it's a good idea is because I've said on this show, and you go back and search for it, because
we'll
it's there.
In the archives.
In the archives, I've said I don't like the Harry Potter movies in particular because they feel like cliff notes. Things have to happen so quickly. Even in the first movie, which is the shortest book of them all.
Well, that's true. I'll give you that. Even a short novel is too long for a two-hour movie. I'll agree with that.
Okay, and so The Hobbit is not a particularly short book. Certainly, it's no Fellowship of the Ring, but it's also longer than, let's say, The Twilight's last book, which got two movies, or Mockingjay coming up, which is the Hunger Games' last book, which is going to be broken up into two movies. Those, and I think that's absolutely great that they're doing that, breaking them into two movies. The Hobbit's longer than those, and there's added story from other parts of the Lord of the Rings mythology that's really part of that mythology that he's adding in. So he had enough material to make
three
movies.
Okay, so film critic Mark Boobin, who hated The Lord of the Rings, liked The Hobbit better, and even defends The Hobbit against the one criticism that most people are making about it, is that it wasn't three movies. We'll hear more about this when we return.
Mm-hmm.
If you enjoy listening to The Bob Siegel Show, check out Bob's weekly column for Washington Times Communities. Bob is also a regular contributor for San Diego Rostra and San Diego Newsroom. And don't forget his website, www.bobsiegel.net, S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net. Here, you can download past radio shows, read Bob's many articles about Christianity, and get information about Bob's books. That's www.bobsiegel.net. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
I want to remind you again to join me for my one-man drama, The Dust of Eden, next Sunday, 11 o'clock in the morning at Skyline Church. Information is found on the Bob Siegel Facebook page. I enjoy writing, but we're talking about a writer who's in the stratosphere, J.R. Tolkien, and I'm joined by a very good writer, short story writer, Mark Boobian, who's also a film critic, Mark Boobian.
Thank you, Bob. So, more about The Hobbit. Let's see. I've got... In terms of it being long enough, I do believe it was definitely a long enough story to carry into two movies. And as I mentioned, with the added material that we don't see in the Hobbit books or the Lord of the Rings.
That they're getting mostly from the Silmarillion?
From the Unfinished Tales, which is the it's the first book that was written after the Silmarillion, which was material that kind of fleshes out the stuff that happens.
I didn't even know there had been anything after this.
Yeah, there's like 10 of these Unfinished Tales books now, unfortunately, but I've not read more than just the first one. But the story of... And so you in the book The Hobbit, you know what's happening, but you just don't know what it is. Gandalf, when they get to the forest of Mirkwood, Gandalf ditches the guys, and then they go and find the spiders. So if they had Gandalf, that may not have happened, but that's not the reason Gandalf really left. It wasn't just a story device. Gandalf really did have something to do story-wise that affected the Lord of the Rings. There's and it has to do with why the spiders are there, interestingly enough. They don't tell you that in the book, but there's this evil presence that's in Mirkwood in the very southern portion of the forest, and the evil is making its way up, and the spiders are one of the signs of that evil. That's coming up. So Gandalf is in The Hobbit. He leaves to investigate what is it that's there. His fear is that it's something greater than everybody else believes. They believe it's a man, a human, that's a necromancer, a black magician, who's just gone too far and that they need to confront and destroy if necessary. But as we'll find out, and I'm sure anybody could infer at this point, it's really Sauron, their worst nightmare, the greatest evil that they will ever face and have ever faced in the past. So Gandalf has his suspicions. He's going to investigate. And interestingly enough, they don't, in the books and in the two books, they don't really discover that it's Sauron. They drive the evil out. We're not told how they do it. We are told that actually Saruman is against it. That's one of our first hints that Saruman, there's something wrong with that guy, that he's not who we think he is. And so we see that. We don't see it all played out. So it's really great material to put into a movie because we didn't get it up front. We didn't get it on screen, so to speak, in the books. So... this is a great opportunity for Jackson to take advantage of something we haven't seen and really flesh it out and show us stuff and really kind of bring this part of the story to people that may not have heard it.
So then you liked both of them then, the first and the second Hobbit movie?
I have very mixed feelings, again, because I'm such a fan of the books and I think they're wonderful, and I wouldn't give Jackson all this credit because, again, there's stuff he does that I don't like the Radagast the Brown, who's not in The Hobbit. He's just barely mentioned. He's the only other wizard mentioned in The Lord of the Rings. The whole thing with the bird poop on his head, that's something I could kind of do without, okay?
I could always do without those kinds of scenes, period.
Come on. That definitely Tolkien wouldn't have had that kind of image in mind. But things so that's stuff there's stuff I liked and didn't like. You know, the characters aren't as good, and they're making it really obvious that it's Sauron just to bang us over the head. I think that's silly that Tolkien really knew to sort of shroud the evil and spring it on us later.
Well, and it is interesting that The Hobbit came out first as a book and was made second as a movie.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think that was also destructive to the story, because now Bilbo, when he's confronting the dragon, now that we know that this is a very corrupting thing, why wasn't Bilbo corrupted? Well, I've already told you why, because he's of this other stock. There's more to him than meets the eye. He's a noble character.
But he seems kind of corrupted by the ring later on in The Lord of the Rings.
Yes, it wears on him, but you don't understand that almost 200 years have passed between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. That's not played out. From the beginning of The Lord of the Rings, it's almost 100 years to when they leave on their quest to destroy the ring. So the birthday party to when they leave, it's 50, 60 years or so.
I did think it was a funny line at the end of The Return of the King, with all they'd gone through with the ring, and Bilbo as an old man is kind of clueless about what's going on. He goes, has anybody seen that ring? I'd like to hold that again.
Yeah, that was a good line. I think it also it's a good line for a couple of reasons. It shows the corruptive effect of the ring, that it still kind of harmed him, but it also shows his innocence in a way too, because he says it in such a kind of kind-hearted way. That was a good touch. I can't say all bad things about the movie because of scenes like that. Now, things I liked about The Hobbit, the scene under the Misty Mountains, this them charging through and stabbing and slashing and destroying the goblins. Now, it's totally over the top. It's absolutely crazy nuts. I've heard complaints about it because it's so just unrealistic, but I swear I laughed almost from the beginning to the end because it's not done seriously. It starts off pretty serious, but then it gets really comical really fast, and it's a very fun scene. So I really did enjoy that part of the movie where it's been critically sort of derided a little bit. Another scene I liked, and this I was surprised by, but the whole play out with the dragon in The Hobbit. Now, if you see the movie, this all happens at the end. There's a long sequence where there's a battle between the dragon and the dwarves. It absolutely is not at all in The Hobbit. No way. Bilbo, the dragon flies away on his own in The Hobbit, okay? So there's this big battle, though, that occurs. And I love that scene because you kind of get to see the dwarves kind of standing up for themselves and fighting back against the dragon after all these years, kind of that angst and anger that's kind of been embedded in their souls for 200, 300, 400, 500 years is coming out, and they're really fighting back. And I really thought it was a really fun and well done scene. And so I like that. I didn't like the Hobbit's Bilbo's interaction with the dragon prior to that, but then I can forgive it a little bit because of what happens, what I liked afterwards. Now, again, these are changes to the story, to the plot, but they're not damaging to the characters in any way. So, well, it's a little damaging to Bilbo when he doesn't keep the ring on, and I think they didn't want to show him. They've got a kind of, it's corrupting and evil, and they kind of have to keep it corrupting and evil, so he can't wear it too much. I think they should have just said, forget it, it's the ring at this point. It's not Sauron's ring at this point. You don't know that it's corrupt, so they should have just let it be a magic ring and run with it, as Tolkien did, who seemed to know better in almost everything. Imagine that. I did like the movies. I think they're worth seeing. They're not going to be the same as reading the books. Read the books. They're absolutely amazing, wonderful stories, and you will be a better person for it. Trust me.
Okay. While we're talking about movies, kind of unrelated, but a quick shout out for the movie Saving Mr. Banks regarding the making of the movie Mary Poppins and the tension between Walt Disney and P.L. Travers, the author. For any of you who love the arts, and it's similar to what we were talking about here. Imagine if Tolkien had been alive and was arguing with Jackson about this movie. Well, this is what actually happened when they made Mary Poppins. It was a great movie. It was a travesty that Emma Thompson did not get nominated for Best Actress. But, of course, they had to nominate Meryl Streep for the 530th time. Yeah. The obligatory Meryl Streep. She's a good actress, but for crying out loud, there's other actresses too. Okay, Mark, we'll have you on in a few more weeks to do the Hunger Games, and of course, you'll be coming back to do the Academy Awards, so we'll be seeing Mark a lot these next couple of months. We'll see you next week on The Bob Siegel Show.
The Bob Siegel Show on KCBQ is sponsored by Bob Siegel.